than 50 years, Linus, Charlie Brown, and the rest of Charles Schulz's Peanuts gang have been on TV at the end of October, searching for the mythical Great Pumpkin in their Halloween special, It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
Each year, the Great Pumpkin rises out of the pumpkin patch that he thinks is the most sincere. He's got to pick this one. He's got to. I don't see how a pumpkin patch can be more sincere than this one.
Well, unfortunately for Linus, finding the Great Pumpkin this Halloween is going to be a little harder. For the first time since its debut in 1966, It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown will not air on network television. Instead, it will be available on Apple's streaming service, Apple TV+. The classic cartoon will only be available to paid subscribers, though non-subscribers can watch for free from October 30th until November 1st. Peanuts fans are angry, and many worry that the gap between who can afford to pay for content and who can't will affect our collective experience of these classics. So far, an online petition calling for Apple to air the special on network television has already gotten more than 180,000 signatures. Joining me now to talk about all this is Alyssa Rosenberg, an opinion columnist covering culture at The Washington Post. Alyssa, thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for having me.
I love The Great Pumpkin. I'm just going to put it out there. I have an opinion about this. And before streaming and on demand, you know, I remember growing up with these shows and everybody would watch them at the same time and we'd have this kind of collective cultural experience. And what are the benefits of doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is real value, especially at a moment when kids are not having common in-person experiences, to making sure that they can have common cultural experiences and giving them the kind of language and references that will help them get back into the social swing of things when, and I don't even want to say it, if they're actually back in school and back in daycare again. And so I think there is something kind of depressing. It's, you know, it's a minor thing. It's a minor indignity. And yet having, you know, this beloved classic go behind a paywall is yet another indignity that 2020 has forced upon us. And I think for a lot of people, it just feels like a last straw.
It really does in a lot of ways. And I feel like, you know, and I'm wondering, is it just us who grew up with watching this and, you know, our kids today just really not? I mean, this is a pretty crude cartoon, you know, compared to what kids are used to seeing today. So is it just a nostalgia that, you know, boomers and Gen Xers and maybe older millennials have versus what kids are really interested in?
Is there anything wrong with wanting to share what you loved when you were growing up with your own kids? I don't think that's minor. I don't think that, you know, traditions are traditions, even if they're a little hokey or a little corny. So I think it's not necessarily even about kids. It's about getting to, parents getting to share with their children.
I mean, and there is a real another element to this, which is really talking about accessibility, right? There's the cultural connectivity that we all experience, but then there's the fact that, you know, if you're not a subscriber, you won't be able to watch this at your leisure. You won't be able to see it with everyone else. It won't be on national television. And what does that say about our media landscape today in terms of folks like Apple and others coming in and really taking these classics and putting them behind the paywall?
So I think it's worth remembering that this is not the first time that a bit of beloved children's content has gone behind a paywall. A couple of years ago, Sesame Workshop moved from PBS to HBO, in part because HBO could give them a larger series order. They could produce more episodes. And those episodes now have their first run on HBO, and they air on PBS several months later, once an exclusivity window has closed. And, you know, from a business perspective, this makes sense. You have all of these competing services starting up. They all want to be able to offer things that will be appealing to people of all ages because that makes them a better buy, right? I mean, if you're Disney, you have the Disney movies, you have Pixar, but you also have Marvel and Star Wars. So you have a sort of all ages offering. If you're HBO, your content has been primarily aimed at adults and to a certain extent. I mean, it's nothing, no famous HBO original is appropriate for the Sesame Street set. Now, if you're Apple Plus, you know, that's a service that has spent an enormous amount of money, and we really don't know how it's doing. They've never released official subscribership numbers. They have extended their free trials for a long time.
Which is typical for Apple. They're not very transparent about their numbers. Neither is Netflix, right?
Absolutely. Well, Netflix at least releases subscriber numbers. We do have a clear sense of that. Apple has not done that. So there is a transparency gap there. But again, Apple needed, you know, wants something that is going to be an incentive to subscribe, an incentive to stay with the service once that once those trials are over. And so from a business perspective, it makes sense to try and snap up these legacy properties. But again, we have no idea how many people actually subscribe to Apple TV. And theoretically, the solution is that they're going to allow these specials to stream for free for 3 days every year around the relevant holidays. The problem is not everybody can stream content. I mean, Netflix has become so culturally ubiquitous that it's sort of easy to assume that everyone in the United States has an internet subscription, and not only has an internet subscription, but has broadband fast enough to stream this stuff.
And has a phone and or a smart TV that they can watch it on, right?
And that's just absolutely not true. I mean, according to the 2019 American Community Survey, 13% of American households didn't have an internet subscription at all.
And Alyssa, we're really talking about poor kids and poor people and low-income folks. When you mention Sesame Street, I mean, I grew up watching Sesame Street partly because it was available to us. And this feels like it might be a small thing, but it really does point to those inequities.
Well, and it's not just economic. There's an urban and rural divide. I mean, there are places in America where even if you can afford broadband, you cannot get it because the service is not physically available where you live. And so, you know, something that is supposed to make life easier for consumers actually makes it more inaccessible and makes us culturally more fragmented. And that's a loss.
So when you have content that's spread over so many different streaming services, is it even possible to have a special like The Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown or movies like It's a Wonderful Life to become those cultural iconic touchstones anymore?
I think there will still be hits. Someday we will have movie theaters again. Broadcast television isn't dead, but anything that chips away at that cultural community really hurts, especially in a moment when we're physically separated from each other like this one.
I still find it very sad that we will not have The Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown on network television. Alyssa Rosenberg is an opinion columnist covering culture at The Washington Post. Alyssa, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.